listening to the Hopplecast with Mac.
You know, one of the best ways to be a powerful witness to somebody is to be their friend.
Alexa.
I don't think I have a sexy secret. I think I just am.
Tara.
Typical basic white girl thing to do, spit on a snake.
And Graham.
You should pursue relationship at all, but evangelize lust and encourage the saved. You have now entered the Huddlecast. My name is Graham with my wife Tara, brother Mac, and sister-in-law Alexa. How are y'all doing today?
Good. We're great.
A few summers ago, I went to Chicago to spend some time with Mac at the end of his internship, and I had an interesting encounter. He was staying with some family friends, and when I showed up, their dogs, they had two little, what would y'all call them, like huskies
Samoyeds.
Or something, Mac? Some what?
Samoyeds.
I don't even know what the heck that is.
I know, it sounds
is.
Like a Girl Scout cookie, but it's a dog.
It totally sounds like a Girl Scout cookie.
I would eat it.
Samoa.
What kind of Girl Scout cookie do you think Samoyed. That is? Do you think that's like cookie dough with mint chocolate chips?
It's definitely something minty for sure.
Well, anyways.
I think we're saying it totally wrong.
I'm probably saying it wrong. And they absolutely loved these dogs. They were like their kids. They didn't have any kids, but they had these dogs. And these dogs were totally their kids. And one of them would just like bark at me all the time. I didn't know what was wrong. And so one of them eventually looked at me and said, "It's because of your horns." And so I was like, "What are you talking about?"
What? Wait.
And
the dog
you know this story, Alexa. The dog was barking at me, and then they were like, "Oh, it's barking at you because of your horns." Like, for a while, we thought, "Oh, it's because I'm wearing like dress shoes and they're clicking on the ground." And so I took off my shoes, and you know, I was just like doing whatever I could. So this dog, basically their child, would quit quit hating me. And they said, "Oh, it must be because of your horns." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Oh, your horns." And he pointed at my receding hairline and was assuming that these dogs were seeing my face and like assuming that I had massive horns, which I do have. I mean, they were noticeable until he said that. And then now I'm like self-conscious about it for the rest of my life. But, you know, there wasn't a fix for this. It wasn't like he had Rogaine in his back pocket. So my question to you is like, do you have any, like, is there anything about yourself that you're like extra sensitive about now? Maybe somebody said something or
wait,
I don't know.
Have a question. When he said, "It must be your horns," did you think at all in your head that he's like a Satan lover and he thought that you had horns literally coming out of your head?
Honestly, I was taken off guard so much that I just kind of like tried to keep as straight as face as possible. And because I was like staying the night there. But yeah, I was a little bit worried about.
You don't think he was like joking, like, "Haha, your horns, hee hee."
No, they did ask if I had a hat.
Oh my gosh, to cover the horns? I feel like dogs would like that less. They would be more scared of hats.
So I was like, this guy's not joking. He's like,
oh my gosh,
trying to see if one of his hats fits on my head, which it did not.
How do you figure out that dogs don't like that? They must have Googled it or something.
No, they just made it up. They just assumed things.
He was joking. It was a funny joke because dogs just, it was inexplicable why the dogs didn't like Graham. And he just said, "You must be your horns. It's like you're the devil."
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I'll go. My voice. Like, the sound of my voice really makes me self-conscious. And nobody's mentioned anything to me about it other than like.
What? Yeah. Then why does it make you self-conscious?
Because sometimes, because I hear it back a lot because I listen to the show. My voice sounds so annoying. And so I'll purposely make fun of my own voice when I talk to people.
Wait, why do you think it's annoying?
I feel like the way it sounds, like it sounds maybe it's a little bit higher than a male voice should be. And it sounds whiny almost. Like it sounds like I'm whining about things when I'm really just talking. And so I will purposely make fun of myself to kind of like, you know, if people, because I just assume everybody's thinking, "Dude, this guy needs to shut up. His voice is so annoying."
Maybe we need our audience to either confirm or deny that.
No,
so that
no, don't say anything, audience. They'll come back. Yeah, could you get back to maybe shut up and stop talking on the... It's like, I love listening to the Huddlecast, but sometimes I'm driven into a rage with Mac talks for too long and I'll start cutting people off on the road.
And if you have that issue, please tweet McLean at HuddleMac or go to his Instagram and comment on every single one of his photos that you have an issue with his voice.
And so when I tell stories about myself, like trying to be manly, you know, or I'll tell a story of where I, you know, kind of halfways tried to assert myself in any way, and then I'll purposely take my voice higher and I'll be like, hey, you, stop that there, you, or whatever, because that's how I perceive my voice. My voice sounding
like you sound like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know one's ever said anything, but I know for a fact, and I know that no one said anything because it's so obvious that I have a very large nose.
That was such
a very large nose. I have a really big nose, and I know no one's gonna come up to you and be like, "Wow, did you know that you have a massive schnoz?"
Wait. Who are you saying somebody has said that, or you?
No
think
one
you do?
Has said it, but I know that everyone's thinking.
No, I have never thought that about you.
You do
ever.
Act like you knows a lot.
Alexa, I have never thought that you had a big nose, and people are thinking right now. Those people that actually have big noses, they're like, oh,
I just feel like it takes up like half of my face.
No, you're
so big. You're good.
Okay.
That's just nonsense.
I'm glad that we're all like denouncing everybody's insecurities right now, so that we're all going to walk away from this podcast so prideful.
Hey, look, I know nobody can see this, but as soon as I just told my story, Tara just put a hat on my head. So like, everyone's denouncing everyone else's, but like, it's, you know, nobody's in denial. Like,
you're going to wake up in the middle of the night and you're going to be like, what the heck? And there's going to be like hair growth cream like all over your head. And you're gonna be like, what in the world? And Tara's just going to be like, I don't know. I went to sleep. You're perspiring strangely.
Nope.
Yeah, Tara, what are you insecure about?
I'm trying to think of one thing. So the one thing that comes to mind, but I can't remember the story behind it. I have a slight lateral lisp. The sound of my S's does not come out on the right side of my mouth sometimes. And all I remember is that one time at youth church camp, this random guy came up to me and I'd never talked to this guy before. And he said, "How long have you had your lisp?" And I was so offended. And I remember, I can't even remember if I knew I had a lisp at that time because it's very minor.
Wait, what do you mean you have a lisp? Like, I thought lisps were where you replaced a TH with an S. Like instead of...
See, that's what most people know. That's what most people think of a lisp to be. It's like a very major thing where you pretty much replace THs or S's with THs. But mine is minor, where really just the sound of my S comes out incorrectly. And actually, a lot of people have it. It's called a lateral lisp. And I remember being so self-conscious about it. My mom put me in speech therapy for about 2 years, and I tried to get rid of it. And I still, sometimes it comes back, but I do know how to get rid of it. But now I don't even really
so
care
So what
about
you're
it,
saying is you just talk like every other white girl.
Perhaps,
is that what you mean? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, but if you're on the right side of her, you got to be careful because sometimes she spits on
all the spit comes out.
Because I hear a lot of, and I call it, everybody kind of makes fun of it. Stereotypical, like, white girl, like, on all, like, you know, everything they say. Like, I went today and got a pumpkin spice latte, and...
Oh, I think that's
different.
And then
I spat on a snake, and I sat...
Typical basic white girl thing.
Right.
Snake.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Okay, this is not about me. Graven McLean, because y'all are very manly men, you are great human beings, but... You struggle with facial hair. You just do.
Ooh.
Have y'all ever been insecure about the fact that you can't grow like a full on, like, you know, manly?
This is crazy. So like, we're going around talking about how our own insecurities, and then Alexa comes out just like calling people out left and right.
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Plenty of people can't grow a beard. I can't grow a beard, but you know.
Take it up with my gene pool, okay? Take it up with them. I'll give you his number. He'll love to talk
to
you.
Do you wish you could have this burly beard? Or are you like okay with the fact that that's not you and for like, no, 10 years?
What are you saying about the beard that Graham has right now?
Okay, I think we all agree that it's not like the furriest of things.
Wow.
So I was in San Francisco last week. Yeah, last week. I was in San Francisco last week for work, and I was headed home Friday evening, and so my flight was supposed to leave SFO, the airport in San Francisco, at 6 p.m., San Francisco time, and then I used to land back here at DFW at 11:20 p.m. Texas time, and my flight gets delayed, and it starts like just 30-minute delay, no big deal, right? And then it gets delayed an hour, and then it gets delayed another hour, and it continues to get delayed until my flight is not posted to leave until 11:45 p.m. Finally, we board, and I end up landing here in Texas, DFW, at 6 a.m. Texas time, so I basically like was awake all night long. It was awful. And then slept till noon. But basically what happened was the plane that was kind of coming to SFO to pick us up had a maintenance issue or whatever, and they couldn't fix it. And so then they come in and they finally bring in this like other plane. And so they deboard everyone, reboard everyone onto this new plane. And then that plane has another maintenance issue. And so then they fix that maintenance issue. But then the captain and the co-pilot and the like pilot team or whatever they went illegal because they had been working for too long. So then they couldn't fly the planes. So then they didn't have any other crew because it's the weekend before Thanksgiving. So then they had to wait for another crew to come in. And then that crew that they brought in went illegal in the air from DFW to SFO.
Really?
Went illegal in the air.
Rebels.
And then, so they landed the plane. Then that crew had to immediately go to the hotel. So then the plane is sitting in SFO for like 2 hours. And we're all sitting there just like ready to board. The plane's ready. We're ready. There's no pilot. And finally they fly like a pilot crew or whatever up from LA. They finally board us. We take off at like midnight or like 12:30 or something. And I get home at 6 a.m. But it was awful. Like I was so angry. I was like, one, how do you not have a couple extra planes? Like when a maintenance issue happens, like why did it take them 3 hours to get another plane? And two, how do you not have like an extra crew on standby? Like this kind of stuff happens so often. I feel like they should just have one or two extra planes and one or two extra crew people. So that when this stuff happens, you don't have 7 hour delay. And then I get home and it's like the next day, Max waking up for his day and I'm coming home.
If you're joining us, this is the segment on the Huddlecast called Hate on Airlines.
Well, this is kind of funky too because we're on live with like our best friends and we're also recording. So by the way, for those who are listening, we're also talking to people live on Facebook. Hey, but I totally agree with this whole airline issue thing.
Isn't American going to get in big bad trouble for having a crew go illegal in air? Sounded kind of like a big deal to me.
Well, now that like all of the millions of listeners that we have, now that they all know that, I mean,
when you start as a flight attendant or as a pilot, you have to be standby. So they have people waiting all the time in the airline lounges.
It's like you're waiting to be birthed as a pilot. It's like it's a rebirth.
You're waiting for your moment.
Okay, but seriously, have any of y'all...
Well, 9 months of...
One, have you had terrible experiences where you were like, I'm literally never flying again? Or have you just had like this light, airy experience of flying and you're like, oh, whatever, no, it's great. Like flying is awesome.
I don't know if we should have two negative people go back to back, so I don't think Graham should add in right now. Graham's so negative about anything airline. Anything travel in general.
Jeez.
So I have a unique background with airlines because my dad is a pilot. So when I fly, I always have to fly standby. I don't get a seat ever. So I just kind of like hope that the next flight is going to have an open seat and then I can get on if I'm next in line. But usually there's a lot of people flying standby. So I have just gotten so content with anything. Like if I get a seat, even if I have to wait for 5 flights to get that seat. Sometimes I get, actually most of the time I get a middle seat or I get an exit row because someone didn't want to pay more for that seat or first class, they didn't want to pay more for that seat.
Let me talk from a perspective of a poor boy like me who eats po' boys.
Poor boy.
Yeah. And I don't get first class ever. I work hard and I get to sit right next to the bathroom and get to experience that. But I don't like airlines for really 3 reasons. One, the policies. Once you buy a ticket, there's just no way of ever getting your money back. It's like you're stuck on that flight. But the second thing is it doesn't even matter if you have that seat because they oversell their flights. And so their policies is like you can't exchange your ticket. You always have to spend the money. They oversell their flights. And then their systems, like one time, and I guess this was like a big thing that affected a lot of people, but we're here in Atlanta and I fly Delta most of the time, because they're sponsoring us. So Delta, thank you for your sponsorship.
I almost forgot.
I'm just kidding. I would never let them sponsor us. I mean, I take that back, guys. If you're from Delta, we'll take your money, we'll take your money. No, I mean, like, it's no good. I show up to the airport and I get a notification that my flight got canceled. And, like, they do nothing for you. It's just like, oh, it got canceled. And so, like, I'm trying to get a flight. And this was over to my buddy David's bachelor party, which I showed up for, like, late at night. And that was the bachelor party that I planned. And so, like, they don't care about you. They don't care about your money. They care about your money.
They just don't want to give it back.
They care a little too much about your money.
Yeah. So that's my little riff. I could go longer, but I don't want everyone to get all upset, and I don't want to ruin my sponsorship with Delta.
Speaking of sponsorships, it's time to I want to address one of them that I've personally enjoyed, and that is the sponsorship of the Shirt Stay the shirt stay personal appearance snafu that I've had for a little bit. Anyway, so the other day, well, so I've started working for a law firm while I'm at school. And because of this, I've, you know, had to start dressing nicer than normal. And part of that's wearing collared shirts, sometimes suits. But one of the things I picked up when I was in the Corps was what was required was to wear this thing called a shirt stay, which essentially attaches to the end of your shirt and then goes down to your sock or your foot. And it keeps your shirt like tucked in. So there's not what we call parachuting or stuff like hanging out.
Matt calls it his love handles.
Yes, yes. So now so now I'm so overly sensitive that when I tuck in a shirt and there's like parachuting out, it like it strikes me as like a love handle kind of deal, and that's like not really my deal. So I wear these shirt stays that I got on Amazon still, and they keep my shirt tucked in so I don't have the love handle look, and I look nice and put together. So that's kind of a weird thing I do for my personal appearance.
How did we transition from airlines to shirt stays?
Because we were addressing our sponsorships, our sponsors.
Oh, right, yes.
And we're sponsored by this, the shirt stays.
Well, Andrew Montgomery just left us a comment that said he prefers flying over driving. What about you guys? If you were to take, let's say you could take a road trip of 7 hours, or you could fly for $80 round trip.
Oh, I would fly. I mean, like, it would suck, but I would fly.
$80 round trip, I mean, come on. If you lose that money, I mean, come on.
Okay, $100 round trip.
Still fly.
Oh.
Still fly.
No, $100 round trip. I mean, you could get that.
No, what? If you're flying to like Lincoln, Nebraska.
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 I would fly for almost any situation. The only thing is like, okay, the flight can go very, very, very wrong. But as long as this doesn't go wrong, like, it's worth it. And it's not going to go wrong. It goes wrong, like, one time out of five times.
You know what? The good thing, well, I don't know if this is a good thing, but everybody experiences the same unfortunate situation. So it's not like some of us who really hate airlines because we're treated
I don't know, that guy that got, like, beaten off a plane.
But I will say, if people don't have the right status, they're totally treated differently.
I have a sexy secret of wearing shirt stays that connect to my shirt, to my feet, and keep my shirt tucked in and perfect to where there is no floof floof coming out of my pants.
And now that all you girls heard about his sexy secret and, like, you know, want to get with him, he's married, so back off.
Oh, yeah. Good point, Alexa.
All right, sexy secret. I don't think I have
any. Okay, what? Women always have a sexy secret.
It's not like a seat. Like, I don't know. I don't do anything.
Like, they wear heels to make their butts look perky. I mean, come on. There's something here.
Well, I don't wear heels, like, 99% of the time.
Well, it's because you got enough perky going for you.
I wear heels to look perky.
I'm legitimately.
This is so frustrating. I posted that question, like, over a week ago, and people have looked at it since. And nobody thought of anything.
Because I don't think I have a sexy secret. I think I just am. No one thought that was funny.
Well, y'all.
She doesn't need any secrets.
I thought that was really funny and no one laughed. Monterey, you got a sexy secret? Lipstick.
I want to say, I do just want to say that, like, wearing jewelry, I feel like, is the key to looking good / being dressed up. I pretty much never leave the house without a pair of earrings on, even if they're tiny studs. I feel like you have to wear earrings at all time if you want to feel at least somewhat feminine.
Oh, gosh, then I'm like a man.
Earrings are so gross.
But that's not a secret. That's definitely not a secret.
I, like, don't wear earrings, like, 90% of the time.
Oh, I feel like they're so crucial to life.
The thing is, I just, okay, I've gotten to this point, and, like, Mac will opine, where, like, I go to work and I, like, don't wear makeup.
Opine?
What?
Opine.
I will what? I will opine?
Opine. Like, you'll add to this. You'll, like, confirm it. You'll add to it.
Wow. Good, nice word. German? I didn't think that was a real word.
Yeah, it's a word. Anyways, like, I'll
would
go to work.
Would you call me?
No makeup. No jewelry. Like, I just, like, I could get ready in literally the 30 seconds it takes me to put my clothes on. And I don't know why. I just, like, don't care anymore. But the thing is, like, if I went out with Mac and we went, like, on a double date or we went out to eat or something like that, I would get all queued up. queued it up. But like on a regular basis or even like going to work, I'm just like, whatever. I don't care. This is the way God made me. God made me this way. I woke up like this.
That or Lady Gaga.
or Lady Gaga. Okay, here's what it is. For me, I feel like if my nails are done, then I'm like tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Like to me, it's my nails.
I've felt that way more recently too. Yeah, it definitely, like, it's more fun to type with my fingernails when my nails are pretty.
Because you can, like, type and, like, look at the keyboard with your pretty nails.
Yes, definitely. I like that.
I don't have, like, a good secret, though. Like, I don't wear, you know, shirt stays. I've
Mm-mm,
considered
me
it.
Me neither.
Could y'all hear that?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, was that a toot?
All right, Graham, do you have a secret?
There isn't, like, a secret to, like, I fart, so I just bury it in the cushion so nobody smells it. Like, there are sexy secrets out there.
That's not a sexy secret.
That
is.
That's
preventative.
Dude, I keep the secret of sexy by burying it. Like, come on. There's more than
I
just...
I pluck my nipples.
I paint my nails and
he
type
does.
On a...
He plucks his nipples.
I pluck my nipples.
He plucks his
Wait,
nipples.
Are you serious? You pluck your nipples?
He does.
I pluck my freaking
daily.
Nipples.
Wait, daily?
Daily.
It's like
maybe
eyebrows.
Weekly. Maybe more like weekly. It doesn't grow
it's
that
like
fast.
It's like the equivalent of women's
God, daily.
Eyebrows.
Gosh, babe. It's like maybe monthly. Golly. I never leave the house without a smile on my face.
You're never fully dressed without a smile.
Not a smile.
All right, now I'm going to give you dedicated listeners the real deal, because I kind of softcored my sexy secret for Facebook Live. And if you're listening from Facebook Live and you're back here, you're about to get the real freaking deal, because you showed loyalty to the show. But I...
All five
but,
of you.
But the I wear, yes, I wear shirt stays, no lie, but that's only half of the sexy secret.
Oh,
oh,
what's the other half?
You don't even wear a shirt.
To prevent the love handles, you also have to do a little something on the inside, and that is...
Oh, no, I don't want to hear this.
You take that undershirt, and you stuff it in your underwear. You stuff that undershirt
oh,
in your underwear.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because otherwise, oh, then
definitely.
You've got a nice tuck, but then also, your undershirt's poofing out there, too, and then it just looks like... Ugh, it looks like you've got like something wrapped around your waist, but if you tuck it in your underwear, keep it tight, tuck it in your underwear.
So long story short, undershirt goes in underwear and then shirt stays on outerwear.
That's why they call it an undershirt, because it goes in the underwear.
Tell me this. Oh. Do you buy your undershirts brown?
Well, guys, Graham and I moved into a new apartment about 4 months ago. You guys know the story. It's a great story. And not that this ever happened at our previous place, but I've been thinking a lot more about making relationships with our neighbors or just people that live in our complex, because I feel like not everybody is in such close quarters with other people. Like, that can actually be a blessing that we literally live 20 feet from the person next to us. What, 600 people in this complex live in such close quarters? Like, why are we not all friends with each other? And along those lines, because I work at a church and I obviously go to the church that I work at, all of my friends are Christ followers. And while that's great, I get great community from that. I have personally been struggling a lot with knowing where to start building non-believing friends, building up the friendships that are not with non-believers. And I know that first step could be right at my apartment door, you know, with the people that are next door neighbors with me. I know that you guys are not in ministry, like not in full-time ministry, vocational ministry, I should say. So how do you balance relationships with non-believers? Like, do you make deeper relationships with non-believers or just keep them as acquaintances? Or do they know that you want to share the gospel with them? So I'm asking you guys this question because you are daily in contact with those who are non-believers.
Whoa,
so,
don't judge me.
No, that's not a bad thing at all. I want to be in that circumstance. I just honestly don't know where to start with that because I'm around believers all the time.
I mean, I think it's hard. Like, definitely, I think I'm probably in contact with the non-believers more. Because I don't work at a church, and a majority of the United States are not Christ followers, so a majority of the people I work with are not. But I mean, like, it's just hard, I think, in a work situation, when to share the gospel and, like, build a relationship where that's, like, a platform you would have the opportunity to do. And I don't know if maybe I'm just doing a bad job, or it's probably a combination of, like, me doing a bad job and it not being, like, the best situation for it. I don't think I do a very good job. I mean, I think that there are a couple people I could say definitely know I'm a believer, but I don't know that, but I don't think that I've ever really done a good job of taking the opportunity, like, really build a relationship with them.
So your question is, how do you build relationships with non-believers?
Yeah.
I mean, I think starting from that point and making a differentiation is almost like setting up for failure. I mean, people, by and large, most of the people that we come into contact with, unless they are just children, are not like socially unaware of how others treat them and perceive them in their, you know, day-to-day interactions. You know, one of the best ways to be a powerful witness to somebody is to be their friend. And I think when I go about my life, you know, I don't put categories on boxes of, well, these are my believer friends and these are my non-believer friends, because if you do that, then you know you almost kind of shorthand your believer friends, because everybody needs the gospel brought into their friendships one way or another, whether you're a non-believer or a believer. And I think by categorizing your friendships, you almost shorthand the believing friends from maybe a relaxation of, you know, maybe the gospel isn't as pertinent to, you know, what I say, because I'm more focused on evangelizing my non-believing friends and speaking the gospel there, where the gospel never stops being relevant or important in relationships. So that's thought number one. And thought number two for non-believing friends is that, I think I already touched on this before, but, you know, people can perceive the way you treat them. And by treating people different than other people are treated, especially in this generation that we're in, people are hypersensitive to that. It can almost be a detriment to the faith in advancing the kingdom, because people don't want to be treated differently because of the way you perceive them. Everybody wants to be treated the same. I think that's biblical, that we treat people the same, and so I would approach any friendship the same way I would approach a friendship, non-believer or believer, and I think ultimately that is what's best for my believer friends and my non-believer friends.
So do you find it easy to, because another thing I struggle with is like being okay with shallow conversation for a long time. As easy as shallow conversation is, I have a deep desire to get into good discussion about something that really, really matters. So do you ever find yourself getting into that type of discussion with a non-believer? Because typically the deep discussion I think about is something about Christianity or something that I believe in. And so that's why I have such a hard time getting to that next level of a friendship with a non-believer, because that requires a lot of vulnerability about my faith.
Right.
I mean, I could totally be wrong. So I'm like setting this up with, I don't know that I'm right in this, but I think, I don't think that non-believers are ever meant to be people that we're closest to. So I think the fact that you feel like that it's hard for you to get really close with them is like good and natural. I think that non-believers are like meant to be friends. They can be friends and they're meant to be people that we definitely reach out to, but considering being really closer and really deep relationship with them, I don't think that's ever something that's going to be possible to do with a non-believer, because ultimately the thing that's foundationally like the cornerstone of your life, they can't share in. So I think that they can be close friends. I think they can be good friends. I think they can be reliable friends, but ultimately I don't think they're ever going to be like in your inner circle. So I think the fact that you have a hard time relating to them makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm trying to think of examples in scripture of Jesus treating non-believers differently. I mean, I know that we all know that like his 12 disciples were his best friends and they were very deep with one another and they loved each other. And obviously there were interactions that Jesus had with non-believers where he would go up and heal them, or he would, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, he definitely would speak sermons to non-believers, of course, but that never meant that they had deep relationships.
I think the difference is it's not like he was pursuing a relationship with them. He was pursuing interaction, and he was pursuing, like, in every single interaction he had, it was loving and it was kind and it was truthful. But it was never like, I'm looking to build a relationship with you. But I mean, he went out of his way to have a meal with Zacchaeus. He regularly spoke to the Pharisees. And I would argue that they had gone so far off into the law that they forgot, you know, what it really was about, which was the relationship with God. But like in those situations, he was pursuing interactions. I don't think he was pursuing relationships. And I think that's the difference. I think as believers, we're called to pursue interactions and make those interactions intentional.
I don't know. I kind of think interaction seems to be a bit of a shallow term used for those who do not believe. I think we are supposed to evangelize the lost and encourage the saved. And so in some regard, I would say it is difficult to have a very deep relationship with someone who doesn't believe, because so much of who we are is about what we believe we are. And so we can't, but I do have very close friends that are Muslim and Hindu, and I mean, I would consider them friends. I think I do have a relationship with them. I think I have more than, you know, regular interaction with them. But we definitely have somewhat of a different relationship. We do stuff together. We have a great time. But do I think that they will ever truly understand who I am based off of who like having God within me, unless God, I mean, cause there's a lot of nice people that don't believe in Christ. Right. I mean, I got some friends that are awesome, better people than I am. And in some regard, the worst people are Christians, because we're just people that recognize we suck. Final answer, I think we should pursue relationship with all, but evangelize the lost and encourage the saved.
Okay, everyone, thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, and like we do for all episodes, or at least try to, we've brought one of our reviews today for your listening pleasure, for your cerebellums.
And this cerebellum is from
Reza. It's a part of the ear.
Oh, okay.
Reza.
Cerebellum?
That's your brain. That's your brain.
That's Spanish for brain. Cerebro.
Sarah? Anyway, Reza 2.0. This person said, listening to Huddlecast is super entertaining. You honestly don't know what they're going to say next. And it's A-N-D-T. It's a typo. You can't. No typos on our reviews. And it's... you will be encouraged, challenged, and are sure to finish each episode with a smile on your face as you listen to the foursome talk, family, faith, and fun. Keep up the good work, Thompsons, and thank you so much. We appreciate that. We cherish that, and we want more of that. So please, if you have not left a review, get on over. And by get on over, I mean literally open up your phone. You're listening to this through Apple Podcasts, and there's literally, like, there's an update to the new podcast thing where, like, you can rate within. So that's pretty cool. You should take advantage of that. Anyway, we think you're pretty cool.
Like us on our social. You can find us on social media.
Oh, yes.
And watch us live our lives, which is very seldom good posts. But anyway, it's... You could see what we look like if you don't already know.
Yeah, McLean's is at HuddleMac on Instagram and Twitter. Alexa's is HuddleAlexa. Tara's is Huddle_Tara. And mine is Graham M. Thompson or HuddleGraham, whichever one you prefer. It depends if you want to see posts from me or not. We love you guys. You guys have a great whenever today is for you. That time, it be great.
Adios, amigos.